This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Hello, hello, hello. We are delighted to be back and to welcome you to our second holiday special of The Last One to See. It's been so long. Am I David? Are you David?
I opened up the software that we use to record the podcast and it's completely new. So that just shows it's been a while, definitely.
Yeah, but it is delighted to be back in the saddle. I was like worryingly excited about doing this. I've worn my Christmas jumper, David, for listeners, because this is obviously not a visual medium. I'm the proud owner of a diehard Christmas jumper, so...
It's beautiful. Red, I can see.
Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho. And then there is a machine gun taped to the back of the jumper. It's probably the cleverest item of clothing I own, because let's face it, I do not have a wide variety of like several layers deep garments.
Love it. Love it. So speaking of Christmas and all that, how is your festive preparations going?
It's all largely done because, hello, it is me. There's a couple of things that I'm just waiting for. There's a couple of things that are due today. So I wouldn't be surprised if our podcast gets interrupted by Steve being like, there's something here for you again. Has he done any of his Christmas shopping up to this point? I don't think so. And it's stressing me out. But listen, I won't do it for him, except I probably will when I freak out. So we'll see how it goes. And then, I'll be on the ferry on the 22nd, coming home to you, my beloved, and my family members, particularly my brand new niece, who was born in August, and it is her first Christmas. She won't have a clue what's going on, but we'll all be delighted she's there. So
love it.
And then Steve is joining us on St. Stephen's Day, which he's very happy about, because obviously English people call it Boxing Day for reasons. And then
he gets a day over here. Yeah,
he gets a whole day.
Big change.
And then hopefully we're going to get one of our spectacular dinners in and have a proper in-person catch-up that isn't just furiously sending each other White Lotus content, because it is currently our entire personality, David, let's be real.
Truly, truly. I feel, well, I've been going deep in the general Aubrey Plaza universe, and the other, I think I saw stuff that it's out on Netflix. I don't know globally, but definitely in the US. Emily the Criminal, watched it last weekend. Not Christmas related, but if you're in the Church of Aubrey at the moment, I must
see. Future Emmy Award winner, Aubrey Plaza. Damn well better be.
Yeah, we love.
Yeah, no, we do. And we are hopeful when we record the bulk of this episode after this intro, it will be post White Lotus finale. So we might give that a drive through, mainly because it's probably going to be the only thing that we are talking about, really.
Yeah, it's like we will get to the movie that we are watching as part of this Christmas bonus. But White Lotus is pretty life saturating at the moment.
And like I was a little, because I think the first episode or two is a bit slow, which is the nature of the type of thing it is. But like as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, I really like season one, but I think season two has smashed it out of the water. I think it is so good. I cannot wait till we are that wealthy and less miserable, because let's face it, these are some, we will be so good at being rich in Italy. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's kind of like a homeland for me. It's like one of my non-ancestral homelands.
It's where I met Steve. So it is sort of, technically it is the reason I live in Birmingham, if you can bend your brain around that one. So you alluded to,
there's so many parallels.
Truly. Check us into the White Lotus. So the main reason we are gathered here today is, as we said, it is our holiday special. Those long time listeners, first time callers may remember that last year we kind of took a sort of holistic view of the Christmas film, whereas this time we've decided to go deep on one particular gem that neither of us have seen. It's new. It's come in hot in November. David, what film?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're calling it a gem already, despite having not seen it. But at like an IMDb rating of 5.2, which is to be kind of expected for a movie
a pretty
like
rock
this.
Rather than a gem.
Yeah, we're going with Lindsay Lohan's Christmas Netflix movie, Falling for Christmas. And I think that it's kind of appropriate, given last year we were talking a lot about the Netflix queer holiday movie being the kind of happiest season a couple of years ago. Last year was
Single All the Way. And speaking of Jennifer Coolidge,
they didn't really deliver this year. So I kind of feel like a Lindsay Lohan-driven vehicle pretty much accurately steps in as a queer
and
substitute.
Like, we're here for the Lohanissance. She is in that era of like early 2000s women a la Britney, who were treated incredibly mind-blowingly badly. Did she make questionable decisions? Yes. Don't drink and drive, kids.
Absolutely.
Don't do it multiple times and so on and so forth. But I think like anyone who's seen any of her work is like, bitch is a star. you know, like she can act and she's looking well, which is nice.
I can also say from firsthand experience of standing right next to her while filming that she's doing very well at the moment.
Yeah, unfortunately, so. David, this was not the film, which I am sad that we're not watching a film trying to pick out your festive cameo, but you did recently work with Lindsay Lohan.
I did. It's as part of the Netflix movie that we will be watching. She struck a 2-film deal with them. And the second one is called Irish Wish, which I don't think has an official release date yet. But given the Christmas one was released in the run up to Christmas, I can only assume the Irish one is going to be released in the run up to Paddy's Day.
One would imagine, yeah.
Yeah, it seems appropriate. So I never want to put the cart before the horse when it comes to my extras work, because you never know if you're going to make the final cut, if there's reshoots, all of that. So if I make the final cut, I will be appearing in a named role as Cousin Seamus.
But of course.
And for said role, I have to drunkenly stumble around. And obviously, I'm not going into excessive detail because I'm sure that there will be NDA type issues if I leak the whole plot. But needless to say, the director did high five me for excellent drunken stumbling work. He thought
the irony of which, David, as our listeners may or may not know, think it has come up, is you're a sober Josephine. So it's been a while since you have been stumbling around.
Yeah, like multiple years at this point. So really had to tap into my Stanislavski method and like go into old David.
So it's been a while since you've been stumbling around. Dig into the old UCD days and try and remember what on earth that felt like.
Yeah. Oh, it came back too easily.
like part of the reason we picked this, like we said, the kind of Netflix thing has become an event. It was also some, like, it is, listeners, as you can imagine at this point, it can be a stretch to find something that neither David or I have seen, so we thought going for something new was kind of the way to go. And also, like, it's been a year, like, we thought we might enjoy ourselves and like go for something a little bit on the fluffier Hallmark-esque kind of way.
I'm also kind of surprised at the pair of us for not having watched it yet, because a lot of the people I know who were keen to see it have already got it out of the way.
Because so
I
do feel in a way we are kind of the last one to see.
It was like long before Thanksgiving and all of that. So I do feel in a way we're kind of upholding the podcast title of being the last ones to see of the La Lohan excited crew.
We had selected this and then I subsequently had a day off on Monday and I was wrapping my Christmas presents because of course I was. And I was like, this would be where I would watch it, but I am going to hold strong. And instead I watched another David Fitz gem of Disenchanted.
Oh yeah. Where I don't unfortunately make a visible appearance at all. And I can only like stand with open jaw at the amount of money that Disney spent the number of extras we had on site that day.
And Dennis Gary was looking well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it is, for the record, incredibly enjoyable film. My two critiques are obviously not enough David and then also not enough James Marsden, because Edward is just truly the greatest creation in cinematic history. The man has committed so fully to this role. Oh, justice for James Marsden. He's just so underrated. He should be in everything. He's so funny.
I dipped back into a much older entry in the James Marsden catalog a couple of weeks ago for Disturbing Behavior. Did you ever see that one?
Oh, with Katie Holmes. Yeah.
The 1998 one done by the guy from X-Files that went through so many studio changes he wanted to remove his name from it.
Like a million years ago. But other than remembering that Katie Holmes is in it.
Like a bad girl.
Yes. Yeah, there was, because I think she did, was it The Gift or something as well, where Kate Blanchett was a psychic and she was also like questionable and you see her having sex and whatever, and it was that real like kind of, you know, bury your Joey Potters kind of thing.
But yeah, Disturbing Behavior, it's like it totally fits him. Like, it was released in 1998 and has that like the Faculty like
what a
all
film,
those
the Faculty
like it's that like teen genre where they're kind of so bad but like an episode of the X-Files great entertainment.
Speaking of The Faculty, starring my personal fave Elijah Wood, we found out yesterday that you are getting a birthday gift with a certain new series that he is going to be a certain new series 2 of his beloved series, and that he is going to be appearing in.
Yes, Yellow Jackets will be returning in March. Finally, we have a date.
Yeah, so it's great because like I'll just probably have just about gotten over White Lotus at that point and be ready to become utterly obsessed with something else.
Yeah. Well, 3 months, I feel like there's definitely another show that can be squeezed in.
Yeah, I'll sandwich something in there. I don't know what it is yet. I want to check out Rap Shit, which I haven't watched yet, with Aid Osman, formerly of the Keep It Parish. So yeah, probably going to check that out.
And also I feel Oscars season will be rolling in before we know it. So yeah. Movie viewing to catch up on some of them.
Are we allowed to say that we are fully standing Michelle Yeoh at this point?
Oh, yeah, like much needed win.
I know there's super buzz around Cate Blanchett in Tar. She has 2 Oscars. It's fine. Yeah. She will be fine. Like, please give it to Michelle Yeoh. Like, I haven't seen anything else yet, and I don't need to.
But yeah, I think, as we were saying, like, Michelle Yeoh has a career that went underappreciated for too long. And while Everything Everywhere All at Once is a fantastic movie in its own right that deserves an award just for that, I think combined with the career retrospective, it should be her year. Like, I really
and I think all
be.
The best Oscar wins, they do have narratives, and a lot of the time, and I don't actually think, I'm not saying it is the case for this film, because I do think she is fabulous in it. It is a fabulous film. You don't often win the Oscar for the film you should have won it for. Like, just look at Scorsese. Like, 3-6 Mafia had an Oscar before Martin Scorsese did, which is like insane. You know, so I think like that does happen quite frequently until you ascend, which Cate Blanchett is on the way into doing, when you ascend to Meryl Streep territory, where you get nominated for things that you actually shouldn't probably be nominated for, a la The Iron Lady. So like, it gets to the point where if you make anything, it will be, you know, you will be talked about for that. But yeah, I'd love to see that. But I think it's probably a little bit early for us to start. We need to see a few more things, I think, before we start like properly hedging our Oscar bets. But I think we thoroughly want to be like, this podcast supports Michelle Yeoh, and you should too.
Big time. It's a resounding endorsement from the pair of us.
So to circle back to the film that we are about to watch, alas, not together, because we are still in separate countries. Whether we do, we probably won't do a watch party, because then we'll have told each other everything that we're going to tell each other on the call. I'd say we will watch it separately. What do you know about this movie?
I know that Cord Overstreet, who was in Glee, came in like
his name
later.
Was Sam in Glee, I believe. Yeah. I don't know what recess of my brain, because I wouldn't have been a massive Gleek, but I can remember him being in it.
He's the love interest, is what I know, and that it's set around Christmas. And outside of that, I've actually kept myself really spoiler free. I'm quite impressed that aside from like co-star, I really don't know much.
I've seen the trailer, because whenever that came out, I don't know, May probably or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember the trailer, and I think it is going to be a good old fashioned case of a head bump and amnesia.
We love it.
Yeah, yeah, can't get enough of it. It's very like Magnificent Obsession with Rock Hudson and Jane Wyman. Like, it's a rich tradition and a rich theme, and pretty much I'm not sure if there's a soap opera alive that hasn't had an amnesia storyline at some point. So
absolutely.
I think that's kind of the vibe that we're looking for. I'm hoping for like either something that is enjoyable or something that is so bad as it's good. So I either need it to be decent or truly terrible. So that's sort of what I'm hoping for, one or other of those things.
Yeah, yeah. And also the only other kind of promotional material that I caught sight of was as a single, she released a cover of Jingle Bell Rock, which obviously harkens back to the Mean Girls performance,
the iconic
with the rest of the
sexy
Plastics.
Dance. Yeah.
And the cover itself is good. It's the same song, we know. And I don't know whether that's going to be delivered in the movie as a musical number, whether it's something just for the credits or what. I don't really get musical vibes off of
No, I don't think, but it is not unknown that in these kind of Christmas rom-coms that there is a random big sort of musical performance.
Yeah.
Like kind of less so a, you know, suspension of disbelief Enchanted style number, and more to be fair, this is a terribly highbrow reference, but when Noah Reid sang Simply the Best in Schitt's Creek, it was like it was at an open mic night. It was part of the thing. That is an incredible cover version also. So like, I really, no shade to it. I listen to it quite frequently.
Definitely. But yeah, I think the movie itself hasn't been getting super kind of post-release buzz. I feel like it kind of quieted
down. I don't think it was the sort of the happiest season runaway train kind of thing that some of the other Netflix holiday releases have been. I don't think it's even really a Princess Switch or one of those that I think there is now like 3 of them, because it was so successful. And because there can never be too many Vanessa Hudgens. It's the next one will probably have like a small army of them taking over a neighboring country.
One thing I did see, though, is that Trixie and Katya, the drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race fame, they have a series on YouTube, on the Netflix channel called Queens Who Watch. And they've done a recap of the Lindsay Phoning for Christmas, but I haven't watched that one yet. So I intend to...
Out of respect to this endeavor.
Exactly. To also watch that, but I'll also be seeing them live on Sunday. So if I'm close enough, I will shout up and try and get like a live commentary as well on the film to see if I can...
David, don't get removed from a drag show.
It's at the Three Arenas, so I don't know...
I mean, you'd have to be doing well. You may have to bring like a megaphone or something. Cool. And then I suppose the only other thing to mention is, as we said, this is going to be a standalone holiday special. We will be back in 2023 with series two. If there are films that you would like to discuss, if there are, and even films that you are the last one to see, please do get in touch with us on the socials or over email if there's guests that you'd like to hear from. We are working away behind the scenes to pull together, to try and attempt a stellar roster of guests.
And especially if there's any anniversaries or kind of special events of like sequels or prequel shows, movies, all of that coming out, flag them to us, because we'd love to kind of tie them in.
We're trying to be timely, says the person who made a Rock Hudson reference not 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, we're current.
And then we are also going to be launching some Patreon content as well in 2023. So yeah, we're back, bitches. We're back with a vengeance, much like Die Hard. And on that note, we're going to go our separate ways and have a bit of Christmas with Lindsay.
Yeah, looking forward to it. That's it for the preamble, so here is your courtesy warning that we're about to get into spoiler territory. And we are back after having tackled the holiday. I don't think we're going to call it a classic.
I don't think so, no. Spoilers, not a holiday classic.
Yeah, so also spoiler, there will be spoilers in this half of the show.
Obviously, yeah, we'll but lads, the film short. The it's fine, just movie. Get on it. The other small
also
note
won't
of,
be on your Oscars list as well.
The other small note of explanation / apology, if there are strange noises on my end, including perhaps some light purring, as there currently is now, since David and I last spoke, we have gotten a kitten. He's great, he's wonderful, he's amazing. He is no respecter of the pod.
The we in that instance being you and Steve, not we being...
Yeah, not me. I mean, David, would it be a surprise? No, it's me and my partner have gotten a kitten. He is lovely, he's wonderful, he's great. He is no respecter of the pod. So he's currently sitting on my lap purring away, but he will, I am confident, make a few cameos. So if you hear any weird noises, neither David or I are in danger. It is just a very enthusiastic...
It is not the stomach grumbling from excessive Christmas eating already.
No. Yeah, and he's throwing paws up now. He's like, yes, hi, I'm here and I want to be involved. I have thoughts on Lindsay Lohan, don't you? So yeah, David, I suppose to start off, because this isn't a Christmas classic, can you give us a little rundown on what is this film about for our viewers who may not have seen it?
Oh, do I have to? Well, so Lindsay is a hotel heiress.
There's a Paris Hilton, winter Paris Hilton vibe going on.
Quite explicit. Because also, I believe, in a parallel to Paris in the movie, there was a proposal at one point on a ski slope with Paris, I think.
Was it Wasn't when she there? Was engaged to the other guy who was also called Paris?
Yeah, it's not the current wedding, but there was a prior...
Naughties, pop culture coming. Anyway, one of her men. Yes.
So the similar situation happens here where a proposal from who I can only describe as like gay Austin Powers is that what they're going it's, for? I mean,
like extremely English, extremely camp, extremely poreless. Like whatever was going on there.
Yeah,
his face sort of looked, he was very on like the most sexual chemistry anyone has is between Tad, the Englishman, and Ralph, the guy who rescues him. Like that was the buddy comedy I think that the film could have been. So she gets proposed to on a ski slope on the top of a mountain that's as part of her family's, her sort of Ralph Lauren-esque dad. Like the dad was giving me strong Ralph Lauren energy for some reason.
One
of his many establishments, and he had gone off and left her there, and they were basically doing content for the gram, and then your man whips out a ring after they've been together for almost a year, as they keep telling us, not a year but almost a year. And then the proposal, David, does not go well.
No, it's a slip on the slope. It leads to Lindsay falling down, the kind of amnesia resulting crack on the head when she gets to the bottom.
The staple of all good soap operas. Where,
you know. So at this point, we've also been introduced to Cord Overstreet's character, Jake.
Incredibly monikered. Cordova Street, who's probably best known. A, he was in Glee, and B, his name is Cordova Street. Yeah. So, like, I think they are his two defining characteristics.
And hasn't really been on the scene much, I feel, since Glee. I mean, I'm
sure he could be pumping out a certain level of TV movie, but I haven't. The only thing I've ever retained about him is that his name is Cordova Street, and yeah, I will be referring to him by his full name at all times.
But Jake was introduced a little bit earlier as a owner of a smaller ski lodge, a kind of more family-run yeah thing. But to be honest, looks fairly like plush. Yeah, it's not like I think a B&B.
Is it like one of those things in America where all of their houses are fucking massive?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, never have any furniture in them. They're always just like vast, empty spaces.
And he's like heart of gold, single father, living
He's a widower, which yeah is always like in these movies, some kind of weird shorthand for sexy, because what women really want is a recently bereaved man.
Yeah, well, like, as in he was good enough for someone that he got locked down.
Yeah, so it's always like some sort of shorthand as this is a desirable man. He's been married once and then his wife died.
Yeah.
And you're meant to go, oh, wow, delightful, as opposed to, oh, God, how awful.
But when you think about it, like, he clearly had love to give if he got married in the first place, and then his love funnel got cut off. So he's just like, there's a love backlog there that he's waiting to get.
Can I just say love funnel? It's a worrying phrase. And also, do we need to look for a sexy widower for you? You seem quite engaged in the sexy widower concept.
Well, no, I can see the appeal fully. So,
and
sexy
widower. Being a sexy widower, he has the other stereotype of these films, an angelic child.
Yeah, angelic child who really went to the Billy Barry School of Acting.
In my notes, I have Billy Barry, and I know this probably won't make sense to any of our international listeners. The Billy Barrys was a very particular type of stage school that featured in like a lot of Christmas kind of stuff that we would have seen on TV. It is a very jazz hands sort of situation.
Well, like a talent pipeline for the Late Late Toy Show of the 90s, at least. And yeah.
So she's committed, to be fair. She's giving it her all, and her all is to be like incredibly adorable and to love Lindsay Lohan. So Cordy Overstreet and Lindsay Lohan come together.
Yeah, we have the grandmother of the child, obviously, and the mother-in-law, essentially, to Jake's character.
Yes, who is Hispanic, but never specified. It's sort of like broadly Hispanic, but never specified a particular country or culture.
Yeah, and they kind of seem to play off a little bit of like, she has wisdom that is not from here.
Yeah, exactly. But we're not going to tell you where. We're just going to sort of go for a generic Hispanicism. And also so she can call her granddaughter, can call her abuela.
Abuela, yeah, exactly. So then we essentially the two casts of characters clash then at the point where Lindsay falls down.
After Lindsay has clashed her head, Cordova Street is out in his horse-drawn sleigh with a couple.
Can I add that the enthusiasm with which they're singing Jingle Bells like just before they find Lindsay Lohan just feels like almost like something out of a horror movie. Like they're so intense about it. And
they're an odd couple. I think, are they meant to be on their honeymoon or it's that kind of vibe?
Yeah.
And then Cordova Street is slaying them around the place, as you say, as they like manically sing Jingle Bells.
Yeah.
And then thanks to the fact Lindsay Lohan, everything she wears pre-banging the head is incredibly brightly colored. It's red or it's bright pink.
Yeah.
So they spot her at the crumpled at the bottom of a hill, and Cordova Street leaps to her rescue.
And again, the couple are weirdly curious about like, is she dead? Is it a dead body? There's something. Like
I mean, it certainly would be a Christmas or a honeymoon that you wouldn't forget if you're like, do you remember when we went skiing and we found a corpse?
Yeah.
But fear not, readers. Lindsay is not dead. She just goes into hospital, cannot remember anything about herself, including her name. And the solution of the sheriff is to gift her to this widower man, which is quite weird. Like, other than the fact he apparently, you know, is very good to everyone about the town, and that's sort of his deal. So, and also, like, to be fair, he's like, no, he doesn't want her, obviously, because he's like, I don't want a woman with a brain injury coming home with me, thank you. But everyone else seems to think this is an ideal solution.
It's also really funny that you mentioned the word gift earlier there, because I actually have in my notes, there's a scene later on where a woman comes up to Sierra, Lindsay's character, or as she goes, Sarah, because she's forgotten her name and she just takes the name Sarah's. That seems nice.
I was really worried it was going to be the name of his dead wife.
No, but
I was just like, oh, that would be too close to home.
So this town's lady says to Sarah that Jake is so nice that the whole town really wants to get him a nice gift. And it's kind of just left there And the scene doesn't really
go anywhere.
It's implied. It's very kind of you are a sacrifice.
You know, in Love Actually, Colin Farrell's like Portuguese maid, who doesn't speak English. There's a lot in Love Actually of feeling that women are being like gifted to men.
Yeah.
or more so when the extremely annoying man comes back from his American jaunt with his hot American girlfriend, and then he has brought an American woman for his friend who like straddles him and starts kissing him in the airport. So it was literally like, hello, I have brought this with you.
You have a job to do.
Among the many other, I think we've mentioned before, Lindy West discovered this much better than I will. But there is a weird thing in Love Actually where you do feel like women are sort of being like handed to men. So this was sort of, and in Cordova Street's defense, he is the only one who seems to be like, this isn't a great idea, which I can understand. Like, his business is failing. He's got a dead wife, an angelic child, a mysteriously Hispanic mother-in-law. Like, there's a lot going on, and he's like, I don't really want to deal with this.
But also kind of slamming on the brakes in a tone that I could only expect that this film had some financing from the conservative right, because he's very cautious about even the kiss. Like, there's massive hesitation.
Which in fairness I do get, because there's a question, like, he gets over it and uses this woman as like unpaid labor while she has like a concussion, because apparently this will help her remember who she is, like cleaning the jacks. But like, there is issues obviously of consent as to whether someone who has had a brain trauma should be lobbing the gob on people. So I do understand that. Side note, speaking of Lindsay Lohan's head, has there ever been a more glorious head of hair committed to film for this entire thing? So much, so wavy, so beautiful. And the other thing that I find hilarious is this woman is like, as we said, it's a kind of Paris Hilton analog. So the fact that like she's marching around this very small town where her father also owns a hotel, you're like, how has, and also like she has red hair, like she's a very distinctive looking woman. So this idea that Cordova Street, the ambiguously Hispanic grandmother and the daughter, who we assume is somewhat, none of them recognize her. The sheriff doesn't recognize her. Nobody recognizes her.
Yeah.
It's quite strange. And Cordova Street actually met her at the start of the film. Now, she is wearing like sunglasses and a giant hat, but she, you know, the giant red hair doesn't.
There's something actually, now that you say, just like the discoverability and all of that, like in a social media age, there's something about the technology of this film feeling like it was written by someone thinking that they were writing it maybe for the 90s, but then accidentally added things in that were too recent.
She and her, I suppose he kind of is her fiance, because she does say yes before she falls off the roof, does she?
The
context is wonderful. Like, they're obviously all about social media and Instagram and whatever.
And calling it an ussy when it's a paired selfie? No. That's such a word that was like a geriatric millennial / boomer wrote this script thinking like, what do the kids say very much?
Maybe I think when she falls down this hill, she also somehow falls into like the 90s where we're just about pre-social media and phones. The other interesting thing, which you probably noticed because you notice everything, is when she is in her hotel room, she turns on the television and they're showing Netflix's A Castle for Christmas with Brooke Shields. It's a weird sort of Netflix inception. I can definitely buy, obviously, that all these Christmas films are in, particularly the, like, not so much, you know, The Happiest Season, which is a very different vibe, but let's say these, like A Castle for Christmas and Falling for Christmas, are in the same universe. I could absolutely buy that.
Yeah, because I think these are the ones where Netflix is going for the Hallmark channel in American market, whereas I feel Happiest Season,
the idea that they're watching them in one film as well, and it is an Inception or a Matryoshka doll of like of Netflix films, I found that quite weird. And the other thing at this juncture, I would have to give a shout out to my extremely long suffering partner, because we turned this on. England got knocked out of the World Cup in Randy Ball David. That's what's currently happening, which, to be fair, he took like a champ, and he was like, what was the film you said we had to watch again? And I was like, Falling for Christmas starring Lindsay Lohan. And like, he did watch it with the face of a man who has smelled something awful. And then at one point I looked over and he had his head in his hands.
Oh, dear.
So like, I do have to, like, braver than the troops, like, fair play to him. He really soldiered through that one, because I was like, we can watch something else due to, you know, sports pain.
Actually, speaking of soldiers, I also really enjoyed the like very war film style head bandaging they gave her in the hospital.
Yeah, but it's like, always like your face has to be like,
that's why she's amnesia.
It just sort of looks like, you know, some kind of chunky like workout web. The other thing, like, there's a weird thing in about bacon as well, where like she doesn't eat bacon And then when she's Sarah and his ultra memory, they're like forcing Bacon on her. And I did have a moment of like, she could be Jewish. Like, she could be like, why are you forcing this amnesiac woman to eat bacon?
Yeah, the bacon thing felt also like, again, that was like a 10 years ago trend, maybe. I feel like putting bacon in everything, that we're kind of over that now or something. That I feel like it's not the thing, because if they're trying to use that as the way of setting her up as like she's the influencer who cares about her looks and like bacon's too fatty or something, I feel like you could move it to a far more that she wants to have like a moon juice or like a probiotic smoothie, and that's more like a modern influencer than
I think. It's like, yes, she's being a normal woman who likes bacon. She's also being a normal woman. I will say the one thing that I think Lindsay Lohan does not get enough props for, she is a fantastic physical comedian in like the style of Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
So the scene where she's the montage where she is doing her unpaid labor / housework, obviously the character wouldn't know how to do any of these things anyway. And also, like, in her defense, whomst among us can fit a sheet on a bed with any type of decorum? I think not. But like, you're just what, like, she does have incredible comic timing. She is very funny. And like, to be fair, everyone who is in this film knows what they're at, commits to it. As I said, I think the true romance happens to Tad, who, after they both fall off this cliff, hill, mountain, whatever it is lost in the wilderness and comes upon a fishing cabin, which is populated by a man called Ralph, who's doing some ice fishing / poaching. I didn't know you could poach. I mean, I know you can poach fish in the sense of cooking it, but I thought poaching was more something you did, like, what's... You know,
with like lay trap for a exactly.
Yeah, I think we'd probably glide past this one, because if there's one thing you and I aren't an expert on, it's like A Girl's Guide to Hunting and Fishing. It's not really our bag. So they're there stuck in their fishing cabin because Ralph's truck has broken down, and you are also left wondering, how far did they go? You know, it's sort of the geography remains unclear. And then there's also another weird subplot where it sort of feels like the inn is the embodiment of Cordova Street's dead wife. It's this sort of...
I get it,
because it's her family business that he has taken on. And then he has like the world's most hideous and also largest Christmas angel in a drawer in his office.
Oh,
That's like a direct metaphor for the dead wife, in that she was an angel, but he can't bear to put it on the tree. And I was like, well, I can see why, mate, because it's absolutely revolting.
Yeah.
And it is also like needs its own bed. It's just so big.
Yeah. Like it's again, this is the type of movie where quite early on we're given a scene where mostly silent, I believe, where he opens the drawer, has a good stare at the doll. It's really explained what it's all about. But we're left to kind of know, like, oh, there's a sentimental attachment to this.
Yeah, exactly. Where he stares at like the Barbie Christmas angel very like wistfully. And then the other character that we haven't mentioned that we probably should, who is there for reasons, is Santa.
Oh, yeah. Santa with the terrifying teeth.
other than the idea that something magical is happening, he is largely not net. I feel like this plot could have proceeded as it did, other than with the like weird appearance of a brand new sleigh.
He's a meddler. Like, I feel like he's not, it's not about the best outcome with him. He just like, it seems to be up for hijinks.
Yeah, but I think there is also that, there is a fine tradition in Christmas films like Miracle on 34th Street, but also in films generally like Sleepless in Seattle, where there is nothing children want more than to get their widowed parent married off to somebody. And it was very Miracle on 34th Street vibes, where it was like, Santa, I want a wife for my father. So again, I don't know, like, again, has she written to Santa and Lindsay's like a mail order bride? Is that sort of what we're thinking here?
Kind of.
She does in her wish for Santa is, I don't know, basically a bit of stuff for her father.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which again, like, the more we talk about this out loud, it does sound like Dave and I are having some sort of joint psychotic break. But this is all stuff that actually happens in the film. And then the other question, the thing that I found a bit nebulous, is how long is she in Cordova Street's failing business as well? How far away was she? You know, the timeline is not quite clear. And also that, like, her dad then comes back and is like, bitch, where's my daughter? So then they start looking for her more aggressively. And then the sheriff's like, oh yes, maybe it's that mysterious woman that I gave to the local innkeep. And the side note is, Cordova Street desperately wants to be freed from the shackles of this business. Because like, it's failing. It's very an emotionally difficult place for him to be in, because it's the physical embodiment of his dead angel wife.
Yeah.
So like, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, and on that, so the fundraising element drew massive concerns for me, the plan that Lindsay ends up putting forward.
The Christmas flashback party. where you invite people on to come to a Christmas Eve party like a day or two beforehand, and Christmas is a time where famously no one has any plans.
Clearly nothing to you. And the thing that was like most alarm bells for me was the GDPR task force that would come down on that hotel if it was.
This is your
down.
You bringing Business David into it as well, because
oh yeah, well,
as well.
Privacy law and like European regulation, David, where they say something about having the guest contact details going back 30 years. I don't know if those people consented to their private data being reused for that purpose and being held for that long. So, Lindsay, you're getting a call from the data protection officer because that was a very incompliant plan that you're putting forward.
But also, it kind of felt so. Loads of people, spoiler guys, loads of people do turn up to the fundraising party to save this inn that Cordova Street desperately wants to get rid of. Like, even someone kept mentioning, oh, he donates money to every cause in town. It's like, he's going broke. Cord, do you think you are potentially doing this because you actually just want to sell your business and
maker
move
of your own device?
I think is there some like psychology happening here that we should be aware of? But needless to say, dozens, if not hundreds, I'm going to say dozens due to the extras budget of people turn up for this Christmas fundraiser. But yet they all, you get the impression they're all local. So I'm like, why have you been staying in this inn if you live here?
Have like checks in an envelope ready to go, like they knew that the check giving was like part of the party, and then following all of that, I feel like we're coming fairly close to the end. Lindsay, on her return to the real world,
The toilet roll holder angel does go on top of the tree. Lindsay does look really hot in a red dress at the Christmas party. Cord does lob the gob on a woman with a mental trauma, which is great. At one point, one of my notes, and I don't know what this is related to in particular, is murder him. You're rich and powerful. Just remember that and then murder him. So I think I thought he took liberties at some point, or else maybe I was just getting very annoyed. I think there's one part where he kind of talks about how hard being a small business owner is, which absolutely was like oddly correct and, you know, resonant in the middle of a film where nothing whatsoever is.
Yeah.
But while they're at this Christmas fundraiser, Tad has returned from the wilderness. It becomes apparent that she is absolutely missing. Then the sheriff has that light bulb moment of, I know where she is because I left her with a man several days ago. And the Ralph Lauren dad is like, you what? So they all go to the Christmas fundraiser. My other favorite part is the dad arrives and goes, my daughter never goes anywhere without her luggage. It's like, well, yes, none of us do. If we're going somewhere, we need luggage.
That's how travel tends to work. But actually, one of the other things I loved was you mentioned there about like the clearly kind of small budget of extras. The Christmas party event like had absolutely no dress code, because you had like the couple who I believe said they had been there on their honeymoon, and they seem to kind of recreate their wedding outfits to come along to this Christmas party. And then you other people literally like jeans and a t-shirt. So
yeah, Christmas sweater really sort of thing. And then you had Lindsay in her red Guna and sparkly jacket as well.
Yeah.
But the sheriff suddenly realizes that he knows where the extremely, extremely famous woman is, being used as like a mail order bride and skivvy. And so, yeah, like, I kind of don't want the, I just want, my main thing is I want Cordova Street to be like freed from the shackles of his failing enterprise was my main hope for this. But obviously loads of people do show up at the fundraiser party. They all do give money and he's there probably smiling, probably through gritted teeth while he's screaming, I want to live in Maui, like, or whatever. But also loads of them also were like, oh, you didn't charge me for ski lessons, or you didn't charge me for this. It's like, yes, Cord, this is why your business is failing.
Business.
Are you tanking it deliberately? Is that what is happening here? So yeah, the world's worst sheriff, Ralph Lauren dad and Tad arrive, where Ralph Lauren dad is like, you've taken very good care of my daughter. And I'm like, has he?
Do you know that for a fact?
Scrubbing toilets and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, then you go back to the mega resort that Ralph Lauren dad owns, where they have this, like, don't get me wrong, it does look incredible, but sort of rooftop hot tub / infinity pool sort of situation. But like, my God, you showed it about 400 times. Like, every kind of drone shot of the hotel was people in like Santa hats and bikinis in this hot tub.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to know that Lindsay has changed because she makes her bed in the hotel room to help out the housekeeping staff, which probably isn't very helpful because they'd have to strip the sheets anyway. And then she goes and cooks breakfast and the trained culinary professionals clap because she successfully flips a pancake. And then they keep, and then there's also the other thing to mention is Lindsay Lohan also has a dead mom, Which is another, like, so it's a sort of Dead Mom Olympics.
Yeah, the scene that we're actually given earlier on in the movie where it's her and Ralph Lauren dad in Ralph Lauren dad's office having the real heart-to-heart about, like...
Yeah, that he, you know, did he fail her and does she remember her mum? And there's an emotional snow globe, because there's always an emotional snow globe in these films.
Lindsay's snow globes are just acting in that, like, Lindsay was in a different movie in that scene to... the rest of the cast, because she was just so, like, that it wasn't just like TV movie, like she was leaning into, like, I'm going for the Oscar acting,
because, like, which she is an incredible actress, and I know obviously there were attempts at various comebacks that didn't work, and now she's got this deal with Netflix / you for her future outputs, but I think they will obviously be of a certain type. So, but listen, she appears to be happy and not doing any sort of substance abuse or trying to kidnap children, because we all remember that period, which was not great.
Well, if anything, like, for a comeback, coming with a movie like this is kind of setting the bar low enough for yourself that whatever you do next is, like, a leg up, that I feel like if you come in too high and you have to maintain that, like, she's taking the pressure off herself. It's kind of a good strategy in a way.
Good for her. So Lindsay in the film is also a very famous woman, because she is so famous, there is a press conference about her being found, which is on the news. So again, we circle back to, how did nobody know who this woman was when she was in the prison in?
For how long again?
Yeah. Just obviously, like, you know, we are not stupid. We understand that this is not meant to be a heartbreaking work of staggering logic. We get that. But I mean, where would be the fun in discussing it if we didn't point out how absolutely insane this film is?
Yeah.
So she's on the telly, and then she also does some sort of ad for Court Overstreet's failing business in that he wishes to be freed from in the middle of her press conference.
Turns out, like, I'd like to thank them for their great hospitality to y'all should really go there.
Yeah. And then on Christmas Day, where A, you famously have large press conferences, and B, people famously are watching the news, they all start ringing the abuela they all start ringing the booking lines for the inn, and the abuela is trying to answer the phone. But at no point does she take a booking or money from everyone.
Yeah. And takes the time to pick up the phone to call Court Overstreet. And it's like, honey, time is money. Like, there are calls coming in.
Yeah. But she tells him, she rings him and tells him that they're fully booked. But at no point has she taken any bookings. She just had people frantically ringing because they were like, I would like to stay at the hotel where they held a kidnapped woman against her will.
And fully booked until when? Like, just for the next couple of days and then empty calendar or what? Like,
yeah, I mean, who knows? But anyway, that's all going well. Court Overstreet realizes he is in love with Lindsay Lohan, but he has no way of getting there because his snowmobile is broken, and apparently he doesn't have a car.
Yeah.
So the Santa Man resurfaces and has gifted them like something like a sleigh that cost like $20,000 or something that we had seen previously. Because it's
the
a handmade
Rolls Royce sleigh.
Which, you know, shout out to handmade sleigh makers. I'm sure it is extremely, like, it's worth the money. I'm sure it's very artisanal and bespoke hobby. So him and his daughter rapidly sleigh it over to Ralph Lauren's dad's mega resort.
I'm surprised they didn't send like a fax beforehand at the rate of like,
or like a pigeon or something. Yeah. As opposed to like, ringing the hotel and contacting her. Meanwhile, Lindsay Lohan has also sacked off Tad, her influencer fiance, which he takes really well and goes off on the, you know, desert island trip he was going to take her on. But instead of bringing Ralph, the man who saved his life and was his soulmate, he takes sort of Lindsay Lohan's assistant, who is a man who had like two scenes.
Yeah.
And then there's a sort of implication that he's gay.
Oh, yeah. Well, like bisexual potential.
Yeah, so, and
as
also,
well,
you know, you let that flag fly, Dad. Like,
don't
wrong with being
don't
a bisexual
want to invalidate
man.
His potential relationship with Lindsay. But yeah, there's a weird kind of queer villain thing going on with him there, and like
again, Tad is the campus man alive, or gay, straight, or bi. Like, we don't know what his orientation is, and like, to be fair to the actor, like, nails it, whatever it is.
But in that way of like the Disney queer villain type thing, he kind of plays up that level of he's never explicitly labeled as gay or queer.
Yeah,
because
he's kind of not really, but like, you know, he proposes to her. What a monster. And then he also is, to be fair to him, lost in the wilderness, so he can't rescue her either. It's just obviously made very clear that he's a very vapid man. So that is, whereas Court Overstreet obviously wears flannel shirts and chops wood and things like that. And
has values,
again,
yeah.
Has a dead wife, David, which makes him a high value man in all of these films.
Yeah.
So he does arrive, declare his love and whatever. One of my favorite parts is Ralph Lauren dad basically being like, great, and giving me the distinct impression he'd rather his daughter dates the man who had her imprisoned than an influencer. Yeah. Which, I mean, understandable. I understand that. So, like, he does not know Cord Overstreet other than the fact that he was holding his daughter. But he hates Tad so much, he's like, fantastic, this is wonderful, great stuff.
Yeah.
And then all is well, basically, except for Cord Overstreet, who is still shackled to the failing business that is the physical embodiment of his dead wife.
Yeah.
The weird toilet paper angel.
The one fundraiser that they held and few bookings are clearly going to set them up for life.
To be fair, we did, like, these bookings could have been spread throughout the course of the year. I suppose we've absolutely no idea. And Lindsay can now make a bed and flip a pancake. So she's sorted.
Life
as well.
Skills.
Yes. And then I suppose just to bring it to a close, I asked Steve, as I say, Steve is a man who is fundamentally lacking in any sort of whimsy. Uh-huh. He's wonderful. He is kind, but there's a certain type of thing that he has just absolutely no time for. And I would say this lands extremely firmly right in that camp. So his verbatim answer when I asked him what he was like, dear Christ, it was a bunch of crap, but I think it was supposed to be. And I don't know if we can do better than that as a sort of summation review.
Yeah. Like it's there were moments where I felt like it was almost like the room where you kind of were questioning, were they intentionally having things up or making it so Hallmarky bad that it's self-aware nearly in how it's doing this? Or is it just...
On one level, it was like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But then on another, that it was completely oblivious.
Yeah.
And like, we're all very mystified as to the presence of Santa.
Because like the likes of, you know, even making the real pointed like Paris Hilton parallels with the Lindsay story and all this, that like...
Yeah. Oh, and she does, as I think we touched on in our intro, she does sing Jingle Bell Rock, which is obviously her iconic Mean Girls sing. And Tad tells her she can't sing, which is also another one of his villain energy modes. Yes.
But exactly. So like there are those moments where it knows its place and it knows like who its stars are and what they're bringing to the table.
Yeah. And like, I don't think anyone is going into this thinking it's going to be Die Hard or It's a Wonderful Life. You know what type of Christmas film and film it is.
Yeah.
So like, fill your boots. And also, it's short as fuck and you won't remember anything about it and it'll be grand.
Yeah. But like, we'll be putting it up there in the canon of Christmas greats.
No, I mean, like, it's tremendous fun. And the whole point of these films is that we can rip them apart and make fun of them afterwards. And it does succeed. And like, she is, you know, probably too good for it, but also is like in her bag doing it.
For sure.
The bloopers looked like were much more enjoyable than the actual film. It did look like everyone was having a good time.
I have to say, it was very nice to see a good blooper reel again. I feel like it's a lost art.
Yeah, because I think it was sort of, we lost it a bit along with the DVD extras.
Yeah.
But now they seem to be coming back, because even to talk about the other thing that we were going to talk about, if we are ready to draw a line under Falling for Christmas, is when the finale of The White Lotus happened, and I now have to find an entirely new personality. A bit worried about that. They, on HBO, when it was originally broadcast, they then had a featurette with Mike White directly afterwards, probably just cackling like a lunatic, I would imagine. So I think with you, YouTube and whatever, and second screening while you're watching stuff and whatever, and especially I think, you know, looking up like especially watching The Crown, does anyone not watch it with a Wikipedia page opening going, who is this now?
Yeah.
So I think
even Disney Plus
be...
seem to be leaning in as well and doing like the documentary releases. Is it Marvel Assembled is the one that they release kind of alongside
even obviously podcasts are a massive one, like in The Crown had their own Netflix podcast, so they're doing those official ones, and there's obviously unofficial ones.
But it's very like, back to what you were saying about like the blooper reel, that like, I feel like the kind of early 2000s action movie like Charlie's Angels that was like bright colors, flashy, but like action kind of thing, feels like it's been so supplanted by Marvel's dominance.
Yes,
of
that's true.
That kind of
which
movie.
Is like very Marvel films are quippy but seldom funny. Like there is no fun or sex in Marvel films. You are not allowed to have either of those things. But I think as well, obviously the blooper reel, like you're not expecting to see a blooper reel after women talking or whatever. There's a certain type of film that lends itself to it. Much like Charlie's Angels is a great show, because from my memory, they did have bloopers in the credits.
Yeah, for both of them.
Yeah, exactly. So it does work for certain things as well. Or like sitcoms are the obvious one and whatever that it works really well for.
But yeah, rom-com bloopers. Like I wouldn't have thought from watching the movie that the content would have made for as good a blooper reel we got at the end of it.
Yeah, because everyone appeared to have a personality in the blooper reel as opposed honest. But I think that is like the thing about these Hallmark / Netflix films. Everything, no one has any pores, as discussed, and everything is sort of hazy. But there is also sort of a lobotomized quality to all the performances.
Yeah, big time.
Which is why, as you say, when there's moments when Lindsay kind of shifts up a gear, it is apparent, because, I mean, a Court Overstreet doesn't have gears.
Like, yeah.
let's be real. The man is like stuck in neutral. But I mean, he does, don't get me wrong, does the job, like, is who he's supposed to be.
Not on the Christmas theme, but also like highlighting that lobotomized performance example you kind of gave there. The Deadly Adoption, that one, I think I mentioned to you before, has like Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig as the two leads.
Yes.
And it was a Hallmark movie. Very much like, is, if you want to see an example of like actors playing the lobotomized versions of themselves, who you already know not doing that, that's the movie that you see that like textbook example of.
Do you think we will draw a line with this and talk about Gay Christmas, the finale of The White Lotus?
Yeah, the other exciting thing that happened this week.
The other exciting thing. Did it leave you relatively satisfied and content, or what was your... Also, guys, obviously spoilers, we're going to be... If you haven't watched it yet, it's been spoiled for you by a gay man on the internet. So
yeah, clearly. It's like, congratulations.
If you care, you've watched it, because we were all... It was appointment viewing. And if you haven't, you already know what happened, because truly the episode that launched 1,000 memes.
Yeah. So like, I will say, while watching it, there was a little part of me that was feeling like, I think maybe the first third of it like felt like a little bit slow, or thought I was kind of expecting more action-packed mile a minute finale. And the inevitable death that we are given at the end, I was a little bit confused when the credits rolled, because I had that memory of Valentina saying in the first episode about more guests being discovered, or there was kind of some implication.
They said there were more bodies. They more never body, said they were guests, and they never said where they were.
Oh, okay. So if it was bodies,
I think we were all waiting for F. Murray Abraham and his like concussion head injury to finally polish him off. So there were more bodies. I hope the gay man who jumped off the boat and swam to freedom made it. Like, fair play to him. That was more initiative than anybody else.
The bodies that she was referring to prior to the discovery of the big shock one, Tanya.
So Tanya was discovered, but we didn't know who it was. That was the very first scene in this, which is obviously like the
what
classic.
What Valentina would have been referring to is prior to that discovery, there had already been the...
I think what happened was from my memory, is Rocco runs up to her and says, there's been other bodies have been found. And she's like, what the fuck, in my luxury resort?
Yeah. So that was, I was kind of expecting there to have been other scenes of death than just like all the death,
which I think was
place,
was obviously the misdirect, where you're sort of waiting for like a four-way murder or whatever to happen. I mean, like, I adored it. Obviously, everyone was trying. I think, you know, a couple of people did wonder if Jennifer Coolidge would die, but I don't think anyone expected a sort of Mr. Bean meets Scarface, where she goes out all guns blazing after these guys, they're trying to murder me. Like, truly the immortal iconic line that will stay with us.
I feel like there, if we're to draw like a comparative studies look between our movie that we chose, Falling for Christmas, and White Lotus,
I cannot wait to see you're going to land this plane. Go for it, my friend.
The concept of the queer villain kind of stepping in, as like, we've got the Taj as the character in Falling for Christmas, who they're implicitly playing on kind of queer boundaries with him, and our gay
Tom Holland, who plays Quentin. Tom Hollander. Tom Holland is Spider-Man. Tom Hollander is the sinister gay man who was having sex with his nephew. I'm doing air quotes. Well, I will be, except the cat is sitting on my hand. And I did enjoy, like, he's like, obviously they're showing her a great time and they're going to kill her. And they are going to kill her, because there is like a gun and rope and duct tape in that bag. Like, this is not like a good time. And that's why she understandably freaks out when she finds out what's in the bag. But like, he does have definite, as you say, sinister villain energy through the whole thing. And obviously the idea is that like, Tanya, Jennifer Coolidge's character, is so desperate for love and beauty and all of those things, and to feel loved, that like, she will, and obviously he's telling her she's wonderful all the time, and she's the exact type of person who will be susceptible to that. But like, the man is this close to like stroking a beard and having a cat in his lap, you know. Like, it is, there is nothing subtle about the energy here, and obviously the sinister vibes, which had us all glued to the television. But she just, you know, I mean, like, she did a load of coke and had sex with an Italian man, so.
Do you know like the really queer vibes in Strangers on a Train, the Hitchcock one?
Which, for people who haven't seen it, it's where two guys meet accidentally on a train and agree to commit each other's murders.
But the Tom Hollander's character kind of reminded me of the energy of do you know, the kind of like the villain character who's introduced as like proposing the murder in that one, that it's that kind of there's the air of sophistication and
sort of puppet master
and,
kind of vibes vibes going on. And then obviously we have Portia, the world's most terrible and terribly dressed assistant, is being kept away by, like, I think we're meant to assume he is a rent boy and not like an abused nephew. Jack, who is like extremely attractive Essex boy who would like absolutely ruin your life, like not necessarily in the direct sense where he has absolutely been told to kill Portia and then decides to let her go, but more in the fuckboy sense of he would like break your heart and ruin your life and leave you with like pulling out your hair and no nails. He has that kind of energy, like, you know, he's terrible but you keep coming back.
The worst.
Yeah, so he lets her off the side of the road with her passport and she ends up like, and as opposed to, at one point, and he has taken her phone, and then she grabs his phone and rings Jennifer Coolidge and is like, there's danger afoot. But at no point does she attempt to ring or alert the police. Yeah, she probably is, other than obviously the sinister gaze when they all end, they get got. She probably is the closest. She's a villain, I would say.
Although in fairness, thinking about it, like if I was in Italy and in a scenario and not an Italian speaker, I probably wouldn't confidently call the police, even though I know I probably should.
Or call the hotel.
Yeah, like, yeah, there's other...
Valentina would swim over there with a knife between her teeth and sort that shit out.
She's ready to take names.
Yeah, she is a power lesbian. She will. They take no prisoners. And then obviously you have our main, our four-way, if you will, of Harper, who's Aubrey Plaza, who is now a Golden Globe nominee along with Jennifer Coolidge, to which I say, well done, ladies, but justice for Megan Fahey, who plays Daphne, who is, for me, the breakout of this series. She is wonderful. And then she is married to Cameron, who's played by Theo James. I actually think Theo James hasn't gotten the credit he is due for the character of Cameron. Like, he has been so good in it, but he's not kind of as much of a straight up arsehole as Jake Lacy played in season one. There's a couple of things kind of going on there as well. But yeah, so they sort of have sort of a Rond situation, although we do not know that Daphne and Ethan have sex, but Ethan...
Well, yeah.
On the island, heavily implied.
I would assume something happened, but not full-blown sex.
Yeah. And it's funny because when you first meet Daphne, obviously she comes across as she is like sort of, you know, great hair, no thoughts kind of vibes.
Yeah.
But the reason, and Ethan reveals to her that something has happened between Cameron and Harper, and that 30 second of the micro reactions in her face, like, is extraordinary. And I hope she will be recognized come Emmy time, because I think the Golden Globes, obviously, they are so obsessed with recency. Like, the final episode hadn't even dropped before the nominations came out. And I'm not saying, you know, give it to the gals. I'm not saying that, but I just thought she was absolutely super in a breakout role where I think she's most known as playing Sutton in The Bold Type, which I have mainlined a series and a half of since White Lotus, because it is very much like ideal cold weather watching, and she is very, very charming in it. But I thought she was wonderful. But the real betrayal there, she's not particularly mad at Cameron because she knows he does this. I get the impression that because she says early on in the season that she doesn't really have that many female friends. The impression I get is because Cameron shags them is a huge part of it. And she really, I think, thought she was developing something with Harper, who did nothing but like bitch about her behind her back and be fake to her, and then hooked up with her husband. So I think the person that she's actually upset about is Harper.
Yeah.
Whereas that's the thing that feels like the betrayal. So I hope she went full from here to eternity and rolled around with Ethan on a beach somewhere. Like, great good time for her. Because Harper did not at all consider Daphne at all. She was too busy fucking over her husband. Like, that was
And if anything, what Daphne did saved Harper and Ethan's marriage. Because like by the end you can see that they're cuddled up.
They're
and
sexy, no longer sexless marriage. Yeah. And then we have obviously the multi-generational Italian-American family of misogynistic men. Sort of. Although like I do genuinely, like Albie I think was being set up to be like a nice guy, again in inverted commas. But he is actually like, he's a pretty decent bloke. Obviously at the airport there is that scene where the three of them ogle an attractive woman together, and the idea is that he can't escape his destiny of being like a jerk.
Player. Yeah.
But in fairness, like, you know, he gives a sex worker 50 grand, or he emotionally blackmails his father into giving a sex worker 50 grand.
Yeah, there's this with conditions, but there's some good there.
And then obviously that does kind of bring us to I mean, the winners of the White Lotus, the ones who come out.
Our girls. On top.
Yeah, our girls, Mia and Lucia, who are like a lot richer in both experience and money. Yeah, exactly. And then it becomes revealed, which I think anyone with half a brain had already figured out and seen, that Mia was not being menaced by her pimp. She doesn't have a pimp, because she actually says that in the first episode. Yeah. That she set herself up selling like foot pics and stuff because she doesn't want to have a pimp.
Yeah.
And also, there's no way all of these men would have gotten away with not paying her if she had a pimp.
Oh, no.
As well. But yeah, he's like a fucking valet or something, or from some establishment. And because you see them hugging and having a laugh on the way. Lucia has, like, I've got to say, Lucia's dreams that she was willing to shag anyone for are really quite humble. She wants to play piano in the bar and sing.
Yeah.
And I love her. I love her voice. Like, because there's a lot of like, oh baby, that's not the note, etc. snark.
Yeah. Like, actually, I don't know. Did you listen to the first episode of the Return of Evan Ross Katzel's podcast? They had Estee Heim appear.
No, not yet. I've listened to the two he's done. So he's released two as part of his Survivor podcast, Drop Your Buffs, which I assume is means something in Survivor land, whereas I'm like, it sounds very porny. But anyway, he's used that platform to drop two about the White Lotus. So I've listened to those, but I haven't.
So it was the co-host of the Survivor podcast appears on Shut Up Evan. I had no idea like the specific detail. I thought that I'd seen some of the pictures of her over there, and at first thought it was like, oh, were they touring in Italy and she like stopped over or something?
No, she's the music supervisor.
Yeah, so she had a breakup at the start of the year and essentially ran to Italy with Kesha, who's like a friend of hers from teenage years, like way, way back.
Keep going. This is getting better.
And it's gold, the podcast. Like, in terms of like what you were saying about the behind the scenes, almost like a DVD commentary. Her talking to Evan Ross Katz about what went on in Sicily just sounds like the gas is crack.
I think we all actually want, you know, a behind the scenes. They all just look like they're having the time of their lives.
Yeah.
Everyone is giving me bisexual energy, which I enjoy. I don't know who is hooking up like left, right and center. Because she was also, I think, a music supervisor, composer on Do Revenge, which we both really enjoyed.
Yeah,
and the music selection was really great.
Yeah.
And then also, I think she was, I don't know if she won, but she was quite heavily nominated because she also did it on Maid, that miniseries, which I didn't watch, but I read the book of, as well. So I think she has, but it is something that she, is apparently obviously very fucking good at.
Yeah. But she was talking all about prepping all of the songs that Lucia was playing at the piano and kind of trying to find what the most appropriate ones, working with her voice.
Yeah, because I love the original, and I also love the guy from Jason something. He was in the band Lighthouse. He does a version of You Belong to Me that's on the Shrek soundtrack. But I love that song. I think it's a great song, and it's been around for, because it's a World War II song, because you can see it with the, you know, like the market in old Algiers, and you're seeing the pyramids and whatever, and it's like, never forget that you belong to me when you're out in the world, like doing all of these things. So I think it is one of those, like, you know, come home to your sweetheart boys kind of thing. And also that is the thing about obviously all these wealthy people, is like, who do you belong to? That is the question. Who owns you? Whether it be like, because I think this season the whole thing was sexual politics and like sex as currency, sex as power, sex as a gender dynamic, particularly in heterosexual relationships. And there are obviously a mixture of heterosexual and gay relationships in the, and then obviously like you get a touch of it in the relationship between Tom Hollander and his quote unquote nephew as well. So that was like, whereas I think the first series is about, it's about class, it's about colonialism. Whereas this was more, I think, about sex and gender. So
there was like a rivalry or bitchy thing in the first one that wasn't as present as you say in the second.
I feel like, and obviously there's always a recency bias. I really did enjoy the first one. The cast was great. It was really funny or whatever. The second one feels like a more complete piece of work.
Yeah.
From start to finish. But I think he really also, Mike White, who is like a genius, really leaned into the murder mystery thing. Like, it's such a, and I know we did have it in the first one where you knew there was a body, but you almost kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I think because the second series is so sinister, so you are watching this whole thing going, who's going to die?
Yeah.
In a way that I think, even though, as I say, you know there is a body, I don't think you'd watch the first one in the same way. Like, I think the second one felt like tighter. And I think you didn't in the second, in the first one, I think you did kind of feel there was some like superfluous characters.
Yeah.
But I suppose other than me and Yulvia, the real winner of the White Lotus is probably Greg, who set Tanya up to be murdered and achieved that goal in that she ended up dead. The one thing I also didn't quite understand was they obviously, we see her that she was filmed doing drugs and having sex, having like extramarital sex, as they call it. But then she says to Portia on the phone that if we divorce, he gets nothing because he signed a prenup. So it didn't, like she could have ridden every man and woman on the island. It didn't matter. So they were always going to kill her. So I don't know, maybe the tape was like some sort of backup or whatever. But then also, why would you secretly film someone you were about to murder?
Yeah, it's baffling.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure, listen, it's my life. I'm sure there are reasons. And it was also obviously to keep us guessing. Yeah. But I think that was the part where you are very confident that it wasn't going to be a scam, that it was going to be a murder, was when she says on the phone,
yeah,
he gets it if I die, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
The and death. Then you were like, oh, baby girl, you're in danger, which we obviously already knew. But like, you know, I was kind of wondering, is it going to be a shakedown? But it's like, no, they're just going to, these sinister gays who want to refurbish their palazzos are going to straight up murder Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. I mean, I'm trying to think, is there anyone in this fast? Obviously, Valentina got her groove back.
We got her groove on for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. Assisted by Lucia. And then who kind of, I thought it was quite a sweet offer where she's like, you need an actual lesbian girlfriend.
But, yeah.
You
know, and the offer,
Mia
like,
and I will take you out.
We'll happily take you out. But like, I'm not the one was such a like, it was a really, not a breakup even. It was just a real like, here's some facts and I care about you enough to actually help you after giving you this honesty. But yeah,
I really liked it. And I think we've pretty much covered most of the terrible people in the White Lotus, I suppose.
Yeah. I think, well, the ultimate question is for next season, where do they go? Because I've heard some talk about having had the two seasons we've had, again, fitting in with our movie choice, a Winter Lodge kind of situation could be
great. I think that has more come from what people want, which is like ski succession vibes kind of thing. I think what Mike White has mentioned, I think like somewhere in India, like on an ashram or somewhere in Goa, because I think he's talking about like spiritualism and that kind of thing as well, which would be interesting. What I do, and obviously I'm extremely
there's
biased.
There's so much as well, like in the wellness space, kind of to critique that, like there's a wealth of types of characters you could bring into an ashram type scenario.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it's that. One thing that I genuinely think could be really interesting, and I know I'm coming this obviously from a biased point of view, because spoiler guys, David and I are Irish. It's never come up before now. Is there are these incredible, like, you know, your Adair Manors and whatever, your kind of castle resorts in Ireland that are incredibly expensive and are full of Americans who are looking to connect
the golfing holidays and Kerry.
Like,
and
give me that in, you know, a Dromoland castle with Andrew Scott as our hotel manager or whatever. And
yes,
then also,
please.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think there is something in that. But obviously, as I say, that is with my own biases. And also we the weird relationship that we have where we're like, welcome to the El Sod, please spend your American dollars here.
Yeah.
But where it can also be like, but you're not, we don't really think you're Irish, but we will tell you that we do.
You know, there is that weird. You are a form of Irish that we have packaged into its own thing.
Exactly. And then there is like, and it's obviously like, if there is a man who can do it well, it is Mike White. It is a tricky thing to discuss. And he did touch on it in the first series, obviously with Hawaii and stuff. Like, we were a colonized country, but we're still white, you know? Yeah. So there is like, I think there is stuff in there that could be quite ripe. But I mean, obviously if you got cast in season 3 and it's like, am I going to Sicily? Am I going to the Maldives or whatever? It's like, no, you're going
to
Ireland.
Kerry.
Yeah. Which, you know, listen, they'd have
not
great
to shit on Ireland, but
yeah, but obviously nobody has mentioned it because no one, I don't think anyone is pushing for it, but I just do think there is something.
Get
really
in that writer's room, Kate. They need you.
Yeah. As I've been in a couple of those places for work, never to stay because they are like insanely expensive.
Yeah.
And there is, and also there is this sort of, you know, the manufacturer, because like obviously both of the White Lotuses we've been in are very modern, like the, and even the thing that was interesting about the Sicilian Palazzo, and it is a palazzo, is it did also feel like, you know, a resort as well.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, and again, even if we did like a winter time, where you have these like incredibly plush castles, could be really interesting. But that, like, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Although, you know, cast Andrew Scott, he will be very good. He can do Sinister Gay. We've seen him.
Yeah,
we've seen
much.
Him do it. And obviously also please do cast Lindsay Lohan. That would be amazing. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I saw Evan Ross Katz had his like dream
list of a cast for
the special guest on this podcast, Evan Ross Katz, because we have nothing but talk about him.
Bestie. I think when I scroll back on his feed there, the number of posts that are related to White Lotus, but it only goes back like 2 weeks. But, oh yeah, so some of the folks that he had included on the list who would be fantastic include Kim Cattrall, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Kiki Palmer, Lindsay Lohan.
I want to get Sarah Michelle Gellar into Yellow Jackets more than I want
I'm almost tempted to watch her Teen Wolf related comeback show that she's doing. I think it's called Wolfpack.
Okay, hadn't heard of it. Not filling me with confidence in the title, but
It's a spin-off from the MTV Teen Wolf franchise, and I think she plays the mother of a wolf pack, potentially?
Of a teen wolf.
Yeah.
Is there anything else before we finish that you have been watching or enjoying in particular that you, or any shout-outs that you want to give?
Enjoying? That's so... What has been good? I know
we've been fully White Lotus pilled. I understand that's been our like main obsession for the past few weeks.
Yeah. I watched a few movies that were decent. Let me see if I can find my diary here.
Yeah, you've been still on the film buzz, which is, you know, great because this is a film podcast.
Yeah. Not very Christmassy themed, but some of the highlights of recently have been Emily the Criminal, I mentioned at the top of the episode, is the
Golden Globe nominee Aubrey Plaza's.
Yeah, great, good like crime heisty kind of one. Would recommend that. I finally got around to watching X, which like is the A24 release,
with Mia sequel Goth,
Pearl. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a sequel, Pearl, that has finally got a release date, I think now for March 2023 in the UK and Ireland, which just is baffling in an age of movies getting released days after sometimes the cinema release.
And then you have obviously the Knives Out Glass Onion model where it was in...
Intentional limited release.
And I know obviously the reason they had it in cinemas is so it can be eligible for awards, but like I would have happily seen that in the cinema, but at the time I had the fucking plague, so I couldn't.
Yeah. And then it was highly recommend it. I did see it in cinema and it is...
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be an option now because it's not available. Like it was literally... in and out for a week. Yeah. Like that was kind of the point. And it is interesting. It's an interesting model. And then it'll be dropping, I think, on December 23rd.
Yeah,
so, yes, I will be watching Daniel Craig doing his Foghorn Leghorn impression over Christmas, 100%. I did just want to give a shout out to, it's not a new film. Obviously, we were all obsessed with it. And I finally saw it on the plane going to Boston and cried profusely, which I'm sure was really fun for the man sitting beside me. On Colleen Kuhn is being kind of put up for a lot of for your consideration. Like it is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful film. And like to have an Irish language film in consideration for like major awards I don't think they call it foreign language anymore. Actually, I think it's like international language.
Yeah.
Cause obviously foreign language kind of implies English is the default, which it is, but it's also, that's not correct.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to see it get some recognition. I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Yeah, actually, I saw that over the Christmas period, there is screenings of Colleen Kuhn at the IFI on Christmas Eve.
That would be a lovely thing to do on Christmas.
2 PM. You can see it there. It's also available to rent on the IFI at home player. And I think, did I read Lighthouse?
And if you're flying anywhere, it appears to be everywhere on all.
Yeah, Lighthouse are doing New Year's Eve at 1 PM.
It will be, and again, it's quite short. So let's say if you had other things to do on your Christmas, it won't be a massive odyssey, but it is. It's just a gorgeous film. It's an Irish language film. It's an Irish film. Just for Carrie Crowley, man. She is fantastic. And she, I always think, was a victim of this thing that RT definitely used to do, and I think still do, where they did it with Corny Shoga, they do it with women generally, where they host absolutely everything and then they disappear. I just thought she, and it was just all so beautifully done. And White Lotus is a bit like this as well. I love filmmaking and television for adults, and I don't mean adult filmmaking. I mean where, and to tie it back to Marvel, I think we've lost this a bit, this idea that everything has to be specifically explained because you're only half paying attention, probably because you're watching things on your phone. Like I do love the idea where it's, and I haven't seen it yet, but I think After Sun is a little bit like this as well. Like, which my parents loved. I think they would, like Paul Mescal, if you and Phoebe are around, you want to come over for Christmas dinner, my mother would be thrilled to have you. She thinks you're great. Like, I think there is this of like letting emotions unfold and letting things happen and not always having to explain things.
Yeah. It was funny. Was it on the You Are Good podcast, the Die Hard episode, I think? They were talking about the way in which you can have a character like in a Marvel movie explain in a big speech, like monologuing exactly what's happening to you, or you can use more subtle things like someone in the back of a taxi and an inquisitive taxi driver asking a bunch of questions exactly as they would, that gives you all the details and moves along the plot in a really natural way that doesn't feel like a person standing up and making a speech.
Yeah, and I think in 2023, like, I would like to see more, and obviously, you know, you and I enjoy Marvel, we see all the things, this is not, but I think cinema has become such a, like, that is the own, and like, I'm as guilty as anyone, like, I don't go to the cinema as much as I used to. I tend to go to blockbusters, but I think also streaming can actually help this, where there is space for other smaller story, smaller isn't the word, but human stories. Like, not everything has to be a pew pew space battle, and also not everything has to be explained to you all of the time, that you can understand and you can interpret. And, like, you know, to circle back to the White Lotus, absolutely think, you know, that Ethan and Daphne threw Dane on that island, but we don't know, and that's what makes it better. Like, you know what I mean? That not everything has to be explained.
Go back to our Donnie Darko episode for another great example of a film that left things unexplained.
Promo within its Inception promo, yeah. Along with the Inception Netflix. So yeah, I suppose it just remains to be said, thanks to anyone who has popped along to join us for this one-off festival special. As we said, we will be back in the new year. I think hopefully in time for some Oscars build up, Michelle Yeoh, Hive We Ride, and to catch a few, I'd like to catch a few more of those films. I still haven't seen Banshees actually, which... I think it could be Colin's year, man. I think he's going to be thereabouts. I think also people really like him, which they should. Yeah. In the brief times I've met him, he's a very nice man. And he is, as I always said, a truly great character actor who was cursed with the handsome face, you know? So like, I think he's definitely going to be in the mix up, and maybe, maybe Brendan as well. Cause obviously I think like the world and all of Ireland truly love Brendan Gleeson. So yeah, I think there is going to be like strong Irish representation this year, and maybe like Jessie Buckley for Women Talking and stuff as well. Like, I think it's going to be really interesting to see. So hopefully we'll be back in time to start our awards journey. That. As we said, we're looking at Patreon stuff. So if there is anything that you'd like to see, we will probably be moving our White Lotus-esque what are we currently watching chats into more of a first one to see Patreon strand. That's the current, is it Patreon or Patreon? Am I insane? It's Patreon, right?
Patreon,
you're a patron,
yeah.
On, but you can become a patron on Patreon.
Yeah, bingo.
Yeah, oh, sorry, I'm making you date yourself now. And yeah, also we will be reaching out, continuing to reach out to guests, but we would also love to hear if there's films that you want covered. I think we will almost definitely be doing Titanic. The time has come. Titanic is the Avatar of season two, where it is the film where everyone feels they have seen. And speaking of the Avatar of season two, would you be going to see the Avatar of the actual Avatar that is currently out?
Freshly out of the water, yeah. That
indeed, David.
If I get to see it, it's not a priority kind of thing.
I feel I am more likely to see it because we did the episode, which again, check out our very first episode with Second Captain Kieran Murphy, who had never seen Avatar. I liked it better rewatching it than I thought I would, because like everyone who saw Avatar only once, I remembered nothing about it. But yeah, like I said, it wouldn't be a priority now for me. I am getting the ferry back home, so you know, if they're showing up there.
Enough to do this week, but it's not like going
exactly
for it.
And the next time I see David, I will be in your arms, my darling, hopefully this Christmas, and we'll be getting one of our dinners on. So I suppose all that remains is to wish you all a very happy Christmas, and please
and
God,
a new year,
healthy and uneventful 2023. I think there's been too much news, there's been too much drama, we've all had enough. I am tired of living in interesting times. I would like my 2023 to be really boring. Is that okay?
Quest for boring, bring it.
The your entertainment will come in the form of season two of The Last One to See, not in the form of varying global apocalypses, apocalypse. In the immortal words of Xander, I just suddenly need to know the plural for apocalypse.
Love it.
So yeah, happy Christmas to you, my darling, and thank you once again for coming on this journey with me, and thank you to Monty for being asleep in my lap for this entire thing and for not attacking the mic.
Much appreciated.